Dancer Anthony Kreutzkamp is 32 years old, at the top of his game, and retiring. In most career paths, 32 would be considered awfully young for retirement, but Kreutzkamp is a ballet dancer, and the exuberance and athleticism required of dancers makes longevity a true rarity. Good morning, I'm Gina Kaufman. Today on Central Standard, we're convening a roundtable of artists in different genres to discuss how age affects creativity and career. We've got painter Philomene Bennett joining Anthony Kreutzkamp for that conversation. We hope you'll join us too. It's Aging in the Arts on the next Central Standard, right after this news. Good morning and welcome to Central Standard. I'm Gina Kaufman, and today we're going to explore how the artistic process evolves as artists move from one stage of life to another. The nature of news, including art news, is to share things that are, well, new. That's what news is. But today we're asking a different question. We're asking what it means to practice an art form over the course of 20, 30, 40 years or more. I'm joined in the studio by painter Philomene Bennett and ballet dancer Anthony Kreutzkamp. Hi, guys.
Hello.
Hi.
Later in the show, we'll bring Kansas City jazz great Bobby Watson into the conversation, and we are really looking forward to that. For now, let's turn to Philomene Bennett. Philomene, one of the very few things you say about yourself on your own website is that you have been an artist for more than 40 years. Why is it important to you that people know that?
Because it's forever, I guess, and will always be. I'm an artist. I can't help it. That's what I do.
You can't help it. That's funny. It sounds like... something you'd like to find a program to get out of.
Sometimes.
Tell us a little bit about your work.
Well, I've been here since 1956.
Here in Kansas City?
Uh-huh. And started doing a lot of artwork. Well, I went to University of Nebraska, graduated with a Bachelor of Fine Arts degree. And when I got down to Kansas City... I became basically a mother and a housewife, but I worked very much in my home until about the fourth or fifth person that said, I understand you're an artist, you know, and I thought, I've got to get out in the studio to make sure that I am what I am, what they say I am. And I was very fortunate to have gotten into a wonderful show that I had no idea that it was that wonderful, but at the University, at the Nelson Gallery. They had a five-state, I can't remember, but it was a huge thing, and I happened to get in it with a purchase award. So I was
What
really
year
happy.
Was this?
Well, probably 56.
And I see that you do have actually four works of art in the Nelson's collection.
Uh-huh, I do.
Not too shabby.
Well, I'm pleased. I'm very happy. And it's nice to see it once in a while, but that's not often.
Well, does a third or fourth decade in the studio take your art to new places that you couldn't have gotten to more quickly?
Well, what happens is that if you're really honest, you're going to change. Your work is going to change because you change. And so I really find that you can't really help it. If you're really honest and you're not doing it for somebody that demands certain things, and you're really working off your own feelings and the way you're developing your own work, that it changes. And my work is so different than when I started. I look at some of the new work, the old work, rather, and wish that I were doing that old work because I love it. And I probably like it better than I'm doing right now. But that's just the way it is.
Do you think that some artists fall into a pitfall of maybe imitating their younger selves?
Yeah, but I don't think you can. You know, I really don't. You know, I would love to... I think about it, and I've seen work, early work that has crossed my eyes that people own and everything, and I think, man, that's pretty okay, and I wish that I could have maybe kept going in that direction. But see, I didn't, and I couldn't, and so you just change.
Has the physical piece of the aging process affected the kind of work you make or the way you make it?
Well, I don't know. You know, I've changed a lot of different media. I work differently when I work in oil. compared to what I do when I work in acrylic.
Explain that.
Well, first of all, when I work in oil, I work with a palette knife and on gessoed canvas. So, which means that it's been, already painted beforehand and gessoed out, so it's not raw. And so that's one of the things. And I work off of more off of observation, where when I'm working with acrylic, for some reason, it's all about staining and developing my imagery through watching what's going on with color. And it's just a whole different process.
A little more real time?
It's really more about, it's more abstract, I'm sure, really non-objective even. But I don't know. It's just a whole different thing. My whole way of working is different. So I kind of like to keep doing them back and forth because, you know what? When you work from observation, I've discovered it's easier, frankly, for me anyway, than working in the abstract form, and just coming off the top of your head because you have nothing to look at. It's all within your own person how you feel it should go, where you have some set of rules, or when you look from, observation, you can see things. And that's kind of like doing a map in a way,
Yeah, or you're getting visual prompts from
right.
the world around you.
Uh-huh.
Well, I want to move on to start talking to Anthony Kreutzkamp as well, but retirement is a milestone in a lot of more maybe conventional careers. But being an artist is in some ways different from being an accountant, for example, and retirement may not be something everyone foresees for him or herself. Is retirement something you foresee for yourself, or will you keep making art all the way?
I hope all. Until I die, because, unless something unforeseen happens with my health, yeah, I'm going to be doing that. I still give, I don't even call them classes. They're kind of sessions that I give in the spring and in the fall down at our studio down at the River Key. And I love that because I love to watch people do what they do and how they move. And, it's fabulous. Everybody does their own thing. I have great music on, and we talk for about a half an hour, 45 minutes before each session, and it's amazing what happens. Unbelievable. And I just love to watch these people move and become who they are. And they really are dealing with who they are rather than who I am. I don't have anything to do with what they do. I just push them along to get ready and do their own thing, see? So,
do you consider that an artistic process as well?
Totally. That's what you have to find. You have to find your own voice. If you don't have your own voice, then you're kind of doing what else somebody else did. If you're going to mimic, it's somebody else's voice,
Well, speaking of somebody else's voice, we have another guest in the studio, and I'd like to turn to him. Ballet dancer Anthony Kreutzkamp. He's retiring from his performance role with the Kansas City Ballet. But, Anthony, I hear you're taking on a new role with the company.
I am. I'll be the Kansas City Ballet 2 manager.
Explain what that means.
Okay, so you have the main company, which is where I was, and then you have the school. Now, there's a buffer in between. So it will be my job to take people that come out of the school and prepare them to be able to be in the company. So essentially take their artistry and their technique to the next place to be able to fill into Kansas City Ballet.
That's really interesting. How old are you?
I'm 32.
So ballet is kind of unforgiving in a sense, isn't it? I mean, 32 is very young for... I mean, just generally, 32 is very young, but it's especially young to have to face a retirement of sorts, although you still have a career, clearly, to not be able to continue performing on stage.
Oh, absolutely. It came fairly quickly, my retirement. I hurt my back 3 years ago, and I saw this. There's an equilibrium that happens between technique and artistry, and I held on until I felt like I was there. Because as I was going, it is one thing when I'm warm, we warm up and then we do things. I'm still 23. The problem is that at the end of the day, all of a sudden, I'm 103.
Oh, explain what you mean by that. What is that feeling?
The thing is I'm very strong when I'm warm and I feel like I am young and I can do anything they ask me to do. But, if I sit down in a chair, my back locks up. And then when I stand up, I'm still in the same position.
So that's so interesting that the dancing isn't the problem. It's the sitting and being a regular Joe.
It is. I mean, but staying warm is also hard. You know, once you start to have, you know, tendonitis, arthritis, different things like that, you know, you need to keep your body moving and moving and moving and moving and moving. And making art doesn't always work that way, you know?
Yeah. Well, tell our listeners a little bit more about the training process and career path for ballet dancers. When do most ballet dancers get serious about training, and what does that look like?
Well, it's different. I mean, a lot of men, I started ballet around 13. Before that, I did like creative movement, some tap and things like that. Most ladies, they start young. You know, they have their crowns on and their little tutus, and they run around. Their parents put them in. It's cute. Little did they know they're going to turn into these workhorses that are doing this every day. But I would say probably around 14, you have to really get serious, because you have to mold your body into a way that's hireable and also flexible. And you have to, you know, you have to do it while your body's malleable.
And what does it look like? What does serious training for a ballet dancer of 14, 15 years old look like?
Okay, I would go to school. I took no electives in high school. This is, I went to an arts high school. I got out at noon. 1 o'clock, I had my first class. Then I had my second class, then a dinner break, and then my third class, and then a small break. And then at 9:15 at night, I would have a rehearsal. I'd be done by 10.
That is pretty intense. And is that what the duration of a ballet career kind of looks like?
Well, kind of. I mean, in the company, we start at 9:30. We do an hour and a half warm-up, 15-minute break, and then we rehearse for 6 hours. But, you know, not every hour is like when you're a student. I mean, you just could never do that. Your body would just give out. You'd fall over. But the good thing is you do work hard. And when you work hard, that's where the artistry comes from. When I'm dead tired and falling over and nothing's working, you can pull from the inside of you some kind of inner feeling to, like, you know, pull the character out of you.
And Philomene, you are smiling and nodding here. Does the same apply to painting?
Yes, I think so. Basically, though, you know, the best thing that happens when you're doing what I do anyway, when I'm working off of my head and just trying to make something happen on a two-dimensional surface, let's say painting, I really try to act like I don't know what I'm doing, and I don't want to have my mind take over. I want it to become beyond my telling me what to do. I want it to come out. And it's really fascinating when you can almost feel something else happening.
Absolutely.
Isn't that it?
Yeah, I pushed myself, I did before, to the edge of exhaustion. And at that point, you have nothing else but what will come out of you.
Yeah.
And usually you can cover, you know, what I couldn't do physically because I was so exhausted with emotional context. You know, that's really where I found who I was on stage. Was really covering that layer with artistry rather than trying to push out. And how high can I jump right now? It's not about that. And honestly, the audience usually doesn't care.
Speaking of artistry, you are also a choreographer, right?
Yes, believe it or not. Right now I'm wearing a lot of hats. Yes.
But do you think, has your sense of choreography, you're, like we've said, fairly young, you're 32, but even just in the span of career you've had, have you seen your choreography evolve as you've spent more time in it and gotten maybe deeper and more dimensional with your work?
Absolutely. And my choreography does not reflect the way I move at all.
That's interesting.
It is. I end up doing these things that I've seen other people do or things that I wanted to do in my career, and then I give it my own spin. Like you're saying, you never imitate,
right?
But you just build, because otherwise you're doing somebody else's work.
Right.
A lot of my work is based on partnering. I love partnering. You know, it's physics, it's emotion, it's geometry, it's everything together. It's how you can lift a lady without it. If you're looking at me and we're partnering, there's a problem. You should always see her. I want to be invisible.
Well, that is also fascinating because your wife is one of the dancers you partner with.
Absolutely.
Could you talk about that a little bit?
Oh, gosh, she's amazing. She's one of the best contemporary movers I've ever seen in my life. And a lot of the stuff I do, I shop on her. You know, I'll get into a studio and say, okay, let's see what we can do here. And she's just, wow, she's twice as flexible as I am. She has a great movement quality, tall, long. She has a lot of line to give. Really, really exquisite dancer.
And part of what you do when you partner as the male is hold up, physically hold up
physically.
And like sometimes swing around in the air another human body.
Yes.
With back problems, that must have grown very difficult.
You know what? It's not lifting that was the problem. It's lifting my leg behind me is the problem.
Wow.
You know, most of my life I've been trying to crank my leg at 140 degrees behind, you know, and it worked and it was fine. But then all of a sudden you have a herniated disc and your second herniated disc and your leg goes to 75.
Wow.
So.
In May, the New York Times ran a story about Mikhail Baryshnikov and how he manages to keep dancing at 61. Obviously, Baryshnikov is an unusual specimen in almost every way imaginable. But when you hear about these rare superhuman beings who are ballet dancers on the stage at 61, what thoughts go through your mind?
Well, we're just different, you know. He was amazing. He is amazing. His movement quality is still wonderful. He's taking a very different approach. He's no longer a quote-unquote ballet dancer. He's doing these ideas, you know, like right when he first started, he was starting doing pieces where he put something over his heart and he danced to his own heartbeat. So the harder he worked, the faster he moved. But then the faster he moved, it became harder and harder until he had to slow down.
That's wonderful.
And then, great ideas. But for me, I got to a point, you know, and I knew the end was coming to my career. But I enjoyed watching the younger dancers grow. I really enjoyed that, more than doing the show myself.
Wow. And part of your role now is as a teacher and as someone who shepherds other people through their careers.
Yes.
How do you think, just emotionally and as a sense of identity and all of that, how do you think that you as a human being will shift in this new role? I mean, is it hard for you to put on... when I was on stage, when I would go on stage, using the past tense?
Right. Well, I'm going to kind of talk around this for a second. Before I hurt myself, I had the idea of creating a dance festival, which I've done, like with Logan Bichar's another dancer we did for 2 years now. Mm-hmm. And I started kind of, like we said, wearing that hat and doing things, and I started identifying myself as that person. And it made it a lot easier to transition out of dancing when half of me was still there. You know, it is hard, though, because people do identify me as a quote-unquote ballet dancer. My family still says that. This is Anthony, you know, the ballet one, you know, or whatever. People in my building, I live in the crossroads, like, oh, this is Anthony, he's the ballet dancer. This is Jill, she's also the ballet dancer, you know. And now I'm not that, you know. But I am still half of what I was. I'm still directing, I'm still managing, I'm still teaching class, I'm still choreographing. And so it made it a bit easier knowing half of me is still there.
That you all, are still the ballet dancer.
All sounds like always. Much more than a half, all of those
Oh,
roles.
No, but they are. Sure. But also at the same time, I mean, it's after 15 years of dancing on stage and repeatedly and touring and doing all these things, you know, the spotlight is what makes you feel like you're at home.
Yeah.
You know, even in rehearsal sometimes, things aren't working. And then I would step on stage, your heart is racing, and then the spotlight hits me and it feels like home.
Oh, that's wonderful.
And you calm down and you become somebody else. And... Yeah, it's just so different, but now that won't happen. But now I'm going to have sweaty palms hoping it happens to someone else.
Yeah.
That's very generous of spirit.
Yeah.
Well, I want to bring on someone who's been researching the aging process for studio artists. Sarah Lynn Reese-Hardy is the director of the Spencer Museum of Art in Lawrence, Kansas. She's with us by phone. Hi, Sarah Lynn.
Hello. It's so nice to be with you.
Thank you. It's nice to be with you, too. Now, in the interest of full disclosure, Sarah Lynn was my boss in my most recent former job at the Spencer. So, Sarah Lynn, it's good to speak with you in a new capacity.
Thank you. I'm delighted.
You've visited with artists in their later years in their studios, both speaking with them about the aging process and observing them closely. What inspired you to start doing that?
You know, I know each of you have probably had this experience of walking through a museum and looking at that label and looking at the dates of the artist, saying, oh, born in this year, died in this year, or there's just the hyphen and it's not defined, so that means there's a living artist. And I started thinking about all of the resources and the wonderful ideas that were still floating around about some of the works in our collection by artists who were older and had work in the Spencer's collection. So it's a slice of artists that are extremely interesting because they have self-identified as artists for a very long time. These are not people who just began to work in their later years, but that their whole lives have really been dedicated to making art. So I was inspired by that. I was inspired by the fact that having work in a collection, how can one activate it? How can one vivify it? And one of the ways, I think, is to actually hear the artist's voice.
Well, we won't be naming any names with respect to the artists you've been interviewing of late, but let's hear some general reflections and observations. What are some themes that have come up again and again during these studio visits?
Well, in thinking about this, what continues to emerge is the adaptability, and I've just been hearing about the adaptation of a ballet dancer. But for a studio artist, it often has to do with how one works with a different set of skills. And I really am specifically using that term not to say there may be some physical compromises that you're not able to do. Maybe it's larger work or heavy or big sculpture, but the thing that comes up for me is adaptability. In one case, an artist that I visited is now using very specific special tools, more apprentices, a larger studio, and another artist may just be making much smaller work. So it's all over the map in terms of what people are doing, but the emerging theme is flexibility, creative adaptability, and that continued commitment to express one's ideas in the world.
Sarah Lynn, have you witnessed any ways in which age itself is actually an asset when it comes to the power of the work itself on a really substantial level, like that the work itself speaks in some way differently or maybe even more profoundly as a result of the time spent or just the stage of life that the person is in who's making it?
So this is, thank you for asking that question. I want to be very clear that this is just my opinion and I don't have data on this. But my opinion from interviewing artists that are in the later stages of their lives is that there is a certain kind of freedom that I think is an asset. A certain kind of freedom, a kind of reckoning about this is the time I should really be saying what only I can say. And that level of authenticity and honesty that is not so colored by a social situation or a context or a media context or a set of galleries, but actually the context of looking deeply at your own mortality and thinking, I need to say what I can say now.
Yeah. So the idea that maybe some people have some places around the globe they'd like to visit while they can, and maybe an artist has something else on the agenda.
Yes, and I like that you say that, because I've never walked in an artist studio and had him or her say, oh, before I die, I would like to do this, do blank, go somewhere, take a holiday. I've always heard them respond with what they feel they want to say, what they still have left to express. So it's not so much about what one is doing from an artist's point of view, I think, but actually what is theirs to express? What's the voice that you want to put out in the world rather than what do you want to do in the world?
Well, thank you so much, Sarah Lynn Reese-Hardy, for talking with us this morning.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you so much, Gina.
Thanks. Well, that was Sarah Lynn Reese-Hardy, director of the Spencer Museum of Art, and she's been visiting with older artists who are represented in the Spencer Collection. And Philomene Bennett, you've been listening to Sarah Lynn talk about studio artists, and one of these things she says is that there's a kind of authenticity. What is it that only I can say? Is that something that you are experiencing?
Well, I've always kind of felt that way, and really, because I don't think that I'm not very good in figuring out what people want or what they would like to purchase. I just don't know how that works, you know. And I've often thought it would be probably nice financially, but I just do what I am, and I've kind of always done that. So you either have to go with that and say, you know, some people will really respond to it, others won't. But that's who I am, and that's where I've been. And I think that was because I think I've always been drawing ever since I was like two, but and always been part of my identity when I was little was I'm an artist. So I've never been anything else, and even though I tried to do something else that would maybe give me a better income, I can't do it. I mean, it's just always who I am. Isn't that terrible?
It's not terrible. Philomene, I do wonder if age brings some of these things that you've always worked with and always felt really powerfully into kind of a sharper focus in some way.
Well, you know, right now I'm working on a piece that is really light. And I kind of, all I'm thinking about, I want it to be light. And that's all, you know. I just want something yellow and white and light. And it's really coming off of the tabletop portraits, little things. But they're kind of there. It's really more design and not design, but just expression of light. And I was thrilled because I had some dear friend come down and say, it is wonderfully light, you know, so that I'm getting it, right?
Yeah. It takes a while to get it sometimes. Yeah. We are going to come back to this conversation about the aging process in an artistic career with Anthony Kreutzkamp and Philomene Bennett. Also joining us after the break will be jazz saxophonist Bobby Watson. Stick around for that. I'm Gina Kaufman. Good morning and welcome back to Central Standard. I'm Gina Kaufman. We're having a discussion about how different stages in life, different stages of maturity, affect the creative process for artists in different fields. We've been talking with Anthony Kreutzkamp, a ballet dancer with the Kansas City Ballet, who's moving into a new role, shepherding younger artists into their careers, and Philomene Bennett, a painter in Kansas City, whose work is included in many collections. And now we're going to bring another guest into the conversation. We've got with us, I am honored to say, Bobby Watson, who is the William and Mary Grant Endowed Professor of Jazz Studies and Director of Jazz Studies at UMKC. Most of Kansas City knows him as a jazz saxophonist. Hi, Bobby.
Hi, how you doing?
Great. Thanks so much for joining us.
My pleasure. Thank you for asking.
So what about this for you? How has the aging process affected the music that you create on just a really on a really pure basic level?
The lady that called in earlier,
Sarah Lynn,
made it, huh?
Sarah Lynn? Yeah.
Yes, she made a good point about trying to say what you want to say, and that this is the time, you know. Really, every day is the time to say what you need to say. But as you, you know, age, you start to think about your mortality. So you start to, I think, choose your notes. For me, I choose my notes carefully when I play. More carefully, I play less notes. I listen to, I still listen to a lot of music. But I'm mainly listening to myself and trying to see what I have to say, combing over things I've heard when I was a child, and as I grew up, different periods, how to bring that into where I'm at now to keep that. I'm drawing upon my life more, you know, because there's more of it, you know, and so I go back to when I was a teenager, things I used to listen to when I was a teenager, things I listened to when I was in college, and try to revisit those and bring them into my world.
You mentioned that you play less notes now, and that's interesting to me. Do you think that there's a temptation for younger musicians to kind of show virtuosity rather than maybe thoughtfully say, what am I trying to do here?
Oh, absolutely. I did it, too. I mean, I used to... I do what they call circular breathing, and I used to play, I mean, I used to want to play, like I could play 5, 6, 7 minutes nonstop. But now I don't want to do that, you know. But when you're young, it's a natural tendency, you know, and it's, I think that's what you're supposed to do in a way, see how much mastery you have over your instrument and how far can you take it. And as you continue to age, you start to realize that you run into yourself again, you know, because if you're playing all these notes, you're going to repeat yourself quite a bit because there's only so many notes. So you get that out of your system, and then your virtuosity, the words you use, takes on another expression.
So maybe, and, does it go from how much mastery do I have to what do I want to say? Not what can I say, but what do I want to say?
Yes, and I guess you let the punishment fit the crime. We have a saying, you know, try to come out of the composition instead of trying to muffle it. If the composition doesn't call for that many notes, then you're fully satisfied and feel fully expressive not doing that. And that type of virtuosity is something else as well. Lots of notes is an obvious thing, but subtleties, dynamics, space, all those things become more important. Range, all the other things become more important. And then you also love your voice, the voice that you make on your instrument. I always try to tell my students, you need to fall in love with the sound that you make. And then the more you love your sound, the more you'll be able to do with it, you know. So I'm very blessed to have a sound that when people hear me, they know it's me. And so when I was younger, I was trying to sound like other players that I admired and always came up short. But then it came a point, one of the first, I think, aging points was I fell in love with my voice. And then that's when you start to move forward. And so now, at this point in my life, I know I have this voice, and how do I use it to express?
And you can be perfect at being yourself. That's probably the only person you can ever truly succeed in being.
Yeah. Well, that's it, really.
Yeah. I want to turn to Anthony Kreutzkamp on this because I have been really enjoying in the past few days kind of stalking videos of you on YouTube. I've been watching performances of your dance, and in some of the recent things I've seen you do, and I forgive me that I don't remember the name of the piece you did. I think it was last summer, but it was very contemporary in a lot of ways and sort of it was fast and it was agile, but in some ways very pared down. Are you relating to some of what Bobby's saying on that?
Yeah, I actually like what he said. You know, he's saying he played less notes and he's okay with that. But, you know, for me, at the end of my career, it was about the execution of something and how clean it can be, simple. Because, you know, the more you add into something, the more the audience has to take away from it, right? But if you lay a step in front of them, that's the step. They take it back home. As simple as I can give it to them, the more they can take in themselves. But as far as choreography goes, yes, it is very contemporary. But I try not to fill up the stage too much. Because if I draw their eye into seven different places, they don't get the impact of what I was trying to do. I really feel like if I have too much movement on the right side of the stage, they do not see what's happening on the left. And that might be fine. You know, maybe when I get older and as I grow as a choreographer, maybe that's what I want to do. Maybe I want people to see it 6-7 times. But right now, I'm just trying to find my own voice so they can see what I see in the movement.
Philomene, is this something that has a visual art equivalent, playing less notes?
Well, you know, I don't know you, but I love music, and it seems like there's a lot of repetition in notes, and I have also realized that I kind of tend to do that. My mark making is repetitive when I'm putting stuff down, and I kind of find that fascinating, and because I want that repetition, I want that movement in that kind of mark making. And so I don't know, you know, things just change, and it's really difficult to even talk about it because, frankly, I've got two paintings going right now, one down at the studio downtown, West Bottom, and one at home in my studio, and they're coming off of different disciplines. One's visual, you know, from observation. The other one is out of my head. And I also like the material I'm using with the one off of my head, because it's a wonderful acrylic, opaque piece stuff, and it just does stuff that I like to look at and make happen.
Would you say that you've fallen in love with the look you create in much the same way as Bobby Watson has learned to fall in love with the sound he makes?
Yeah, well, you know, you almost have to. I always tell myself now, I look back and I say, do I get excited when I look at that? And if I don't, nobody else will. So I really kind of am my own worst critic. I might have to repeat the whole thing. I mean, redo the whole thing just because it's not doing – it's sorta. But it has to be over the sorta. It has to be better. And I have to get excited and think, that's it. That's done. And I really like it. I have no idea, though – what it will take. Sometimes it's absolutely a foreign idea that comes through that really makes something happen.
You know, Bobby, I want to turn back to you because earlier in this conversation, Philomene Bennett said something that was really interesting about how as you age, you change. Over time, a person changes, and you can either change with your work can change with you, or it can maybe become stagnant. And you were talking about how you have a sound that people can recognize. How do you reconcile that recognizability, that thing about yourself that's just you and will always be you, and you've honed that and fine-tuned it with changes in life? Has your music changed with you?
I think so, yes. I mean, there was a period in this music where the music was always driven by youth, changes, you know, bebop and swing and everything. When you listen to those records, I have to remind people that those were young people doing this, making the changes, pushing the music forward. And some of the older musicians during that period rebelled against, or, you know, not rebelled,
maybe resisted.
Were resistant toward the change. And some of the older musicians embraced the change. And so those musicians represented a certain style of the music as the music changed around them. But now the people that we look up to are in their 80s. You know, Wayne Shorter and Herbie Hancock and people like that, people might know, they're 80-something, and they're still at the cutting edge. And so you take your sound and you try to put it with some young folks. I try to stay around young people and have a mixture of people who are around my generation and young ones, you know, like the mentoring thing that was speaking about, the gentleman with the choreography trying to mentor them. So it's a combination of the old and the young.
So when you mentor them, do they also in return kind of mentor you?
Absolutely. I want to see what they're doing, you know. I can show them the science of it and things like that, show them people that were influenced me over my years. But I'm very curious as to what they're doing and try to stay in the mix with them.
And Bobby, you also work across genres. We had in here a little while ago, maybe a month ago, Glenn North, the poet who has collaborated with you. And now Anthony Kreutzkamp is sitting here. He's a ballet dancer who has worked with you in dance. Improvised and he improvised right along with you.
Yeah,
I wonder if the
right.
two of you could talk a little bit about that experience, because although, Anthony, you are retiring from dance performance, you are quite young, 32.
Yes. Go ahead, Bobby. You can...
Oh, well... That was quite exciting, you know. These are things, I guess, you know, Carol Armitage was like my sound and what I did, so she wrote this piece with me in mind, and the dancers were playing off of each other. Although it was, I mean, there was, the dancers had freedom within the structure, if that makes sense. So there was structure that I could see, and then when I knew something was coming, I would try to be there with them, and then they would work off of me and I'd work off of them. And that was quite fun and challenging and scary And I think it's...
What was scary about it?
Well, you know, I've never done it before. So it's like, you know, I think you need that kind of edge, you know. That's the other thing, not getting comfortable. So that was like, you know, it was scary. It was fun scary, you know.
Was it fun? I wonder if it was fun scary for Anthony Kruetzkamp, too. Oh.
I wasn't scared. I just, you have to have a lot of trust.
Because
I was lifting Rachel, I'm partnering her, then plus I'm going off of you. And, you know, I knew a lift was coming. I'm like, well, I'm going to go up and the note's going to be there. I know Bobby will be there, you know, and that's how it goes. But also, you know, you played it differently every day. So then all of a sudden I was becoming a different artist than I was the day before. Because maybe we're a little sharper today. Maybe we'll be a little bit more relaxed. Sometimes you would chop up the notes a little bit, but it still sounded very similar. And that's how I moved. You know, sometimes I would glide across the stage. Sometimes I would hit the floor a little harder, depending on how I felt you were. Which was the first time I had to be reactionary. I mean, usually it's me and the maestro, and, you know, we're just trying to do a show. And she's conducting, and we're working together that way. But it was the first time that I had to change everything at the moment. It was fun.
Well,
oh, it was fun.
Anthony is going to have to get back to his students, the people he mentors back at the ballet. So we're going to thank him for his time here and let him continue on in the next stage of his career as a mentor. Anthony Kruetzkamp, ballet dancer, thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
And Philomene Bennett, I'd like to turn back to you. When you hear about this thing of not getting too comfortable and letting younger artists perhaps challenge you, what's your relationship with younger artists in Kansas City?
Well, first of all, it's always fun to see them because they're, of course, they have a different relationship to art than I do because of their age and how they grew and what they were accustomed to. I always think that a lot of the visual arts are about more about what you were like when you were little growing up, you know? And so I'm at a point right now that I admire these young innovative people doing all this wonderful stuff, and of course they've got the electronics and everything now going on, so much more a medium to work with that it's wonderful. I think it's fabulous. I've got a couple people in my group that my sessions I have that have had museum shows that I feel really fabulously happy about because they're good and it's worthwhile work. It's very contemporary and it's wonderful. And when the younger group comes in, I just have to remind everybody that I work with that you have to do who you are. You can't be 12 or 14 or 22 or whatever if you're 50. You know, you're 50.
I've looked at your bio and some of the shows that you've put on in mm-hmm. the past. And I noticed that early in your career, you were invited to participate in a lot of shows that were women in the arts.
Right.
And I wonder if how things have changed for women in the arts is something that you look back on your career and say, this is a difference between me and perhaps a younger female artist in particular, that your path might have been different because of times have changed.
Well, I'm sure of it. I'm sure of it because I think that it's not as heavy towards the male totally as it was when I was starting out and everything. You really had to not only – I remember thinking painting in black and white because I thought it was more masculine.
I did notice that some of your early work was a little less colorful.
Right. In fact, you know what was really fascinating to me? When my dad died – it was the first time I actually allowed myself to be, for some reason, I was doing pastels. And I don't know what that means at all, except that I just felt very, I wanted it to be very strong. And I guess it was the Jackson Pollock, you know, syndrome. You know, you had to, you know, have a lot of paint all over yourself and lots of heavy boots. And
and so it took courage to pull it back from that.
Well, I think it just happened, you know. I think it really is part of the living and realizing, though. But I remember thinking how, when it did happen, how, in retrospect, I had never happened before. Which even when I was in school, it was really about that time, you know, the abstract expressionism was huge. And so you presented yourself in those ways, you know. And in fact, a lot of people that probably weren't really acclimated to do that probably left the department because it was kind of in that zone that everybody should be forward, you know, do fresh new stuff and move forward and express yourself, really.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to Central Standard on KCUR 89.3 FM. I'm Gina Kaufman talking with Philomene Bennett and Bobby Watson about the aging process and how it affects the artistic process. We've got a few more minutes left for that conversation. And Bobby, what do you think about sort of how the history of how people make careers in music and particularly in jazz is changing since you were a younger man?
Oh, that's a good question. I have to tell my students the opportunities that I've had and the people that helped me are no longer here. And I think that I don't know, honestly, what's going to happen next, because I just think that when young people have desire and a drive, I think opportunities come their way. I think you just have to be ready for them and prepared in terms of knowing the science and of the music and the instrument, being well prepared, and that something will come your way. Because I know that I deal with people that play instruments, so I think instruments have been minimalized the last couple of decades. You know, both in public schools and schools. And also in public performances, young people, a lot of people don't get to see a real instrument and hear it being played. And I think trends turn. So I just think you have to be ready. They say what the luck is when preparation meets opportunity. And for me, I went to New York, and I was hanging out every night, and I ran into Art Blakey, and he asked me to join the group. And that wasn't my plan. When I went to New York, I just wanted to be involved. That was my desire. And through Art Blakey, I was able to be involved. So I think that the kids today shouldn't be discouraged. They should have that drive and the desire and just move forward with courage. And I think something will happen. That's the unnerving part of being an artist. You don't know. You just have to move forward in faith.
A lot of people say, and I don't know, you know, it may be just a platitude, but I think there may be something to it, that there's an agelessness of spirit among artists that that really characterizes people who are tapping into that creative area in their lives. And we've talked a lot about how age does affect your work. Are there some ways in which age doesn't affect you?
Absolutely. I mean, I'm forever a child, you know. It's endless, and so that keeps you young. And like I say, our heroes that we still look up to today are in their 80s, and they're still out there doing it. And they're young, and they're funny, and they have a sense of humor, and they're always looking. They're still practicing. They're still writing. They're still performing. Like, we'll do this till we can't do it anymore, because it's endless.
Philomene, is that your attitude as well? Do you think that there is an agelessness to artists?
Yes, by all means, because it's a beautiful way to go. It's just a marvelous life to have if you're lucky enough to be able to make it work for yourself.
One of the quotes that has always kind of spoken to me a little bit is the artist's life is the best life if you can make it through the first 40 years.
That's, I think, right.
That's Thomas Hart Benton. And a lot of people in a lot of areas,
right.
You know, things are supposed to maybe, I don't know, people see youth as maybe an easy time. But in the arts, what are maybe some of the challenges of youth? We look at youth as this sort of idealized time, but in the arts, Philomene does.
Well, you know, I think you have to have a total commitment, you know? It's like you have to be obsessed almost. And
yes.
Truly, don't you think so?
Yes.
Yeah. And I just, I know that I've through my life, I've seen a lot of people that think they want to be, and then I have to say, how badly do you want to be an artist? Because it really is total commitment. And you become that, and that's you can't do anything else, really. So,
absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
What is it that you have to be able to endure, that you have to want it so badly that you, you know, what is it that early, those first 40 years consist of?
Well, a lot of rejection from, you know. I mean, it's part of the thing, part of the game, you know. And, you know, and you have to find another, somebody, I have a wonderful book that I always tell everybody to read. It was David Smith by David Smith. He was a sculptor. And it's like my Bible, to tell everybody to read it, because it kind of tells you just kind of what you have to go through and everything. And one of them was, get another job so that you're not actually painting or doing something that will take away from your work that it's not about who you are, you know?
So can you explain? So you mean, like, if you are interested in being a visual artist, what might be better than...
Be a waitress or sell or go drive a taxi or something. And then work on your work.
Bobby, what do you think of that?
I think it's a great idea. You want something where you can still be free to create security in young years. You know, everybody's worried about security.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and in this world, you do need money, and so you don't want to get tied up in something that'll take you away from your passion.
And Bobby, now that you don't have to worry so much about that, what does that free you up to think about or pursue?
I'm able to pick and choose more, and not have to travel as much, because the travel will wear you down.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I can work. I'm very stingy with my time. I'm very precious of, you know, with my time. So when I open myself up to something, that's going to take time.
Yeah. And, well, that's all the time we have for today's conversation about aging in the arts. I've enjoyed learning about the rewards that await someone who's practiced for quite a while. It's been an honor speaking with Philomene Bennett and Bobby Watson today. Thanks for being here, guys.
Thank you.
And we spoke earlier with ballet dancer Anthony Kreutzkamp and Spencer Museum of Art director Sarah Lynn Reese-Hardy. To listen back to today's show or any previous conversations on Central Standard, just go to kcur.org/Central Standard. Tune in tomorrow to meet some of the boys participating in Boys Grow, a program that teaches city kids about food and agriculture. We'll check in on the buzz around that tomorrow. Central Standard is produced by Matthew Long Middleton and Sylvia Maria Gross. I'm Gina Kaufman. Stick around for Up to Date next.